This is episode 96 of the Creative Giant Show. I'm Charlie Gilkey. Thanks so much for joining me today. Peter Drucker said, "The only things that evolve by themselves in an organization are disorder, friction, and malperformance." In a similar vein, it seems that businesses and organizations naturally tend toward complexity, much to the dismay and frustration of the people in them and those who interact with them. You can't beat complexity with more complexity. Ken Siegel joins me today to share how leaders have to think simple to counteract complexity in their organizations. Ready? Let's do this.
Welcome to the Creative Giant Show, where we go behind the scenes about what it means to live a life full of creative and professional success. Creative giants are talented, renaissance souls with a compassion-fueled bias towards action. Now, here is your host, Charlie Gilkey.
Hello, creative giants. I'm delighted to introduce you to Ken Siegel. Ken is the author of the New York Times bestseller, Insanely Simple. Working with Steve Jobs as his ad agency creative director for 12 years, spanning Next and Apple, he led the team behind Apple's legendary Think Different campaign and set Apple down the iway by naming the iMac. Siegel has also served as agency global creative director for IBM, Intel, Dell, and BMW. He is an international speaker on the power of simplicity and frequently appears on cable and internet news for his marketing insights. Ken, thanks so much for joining me on today's episode, and I'm excited to talk to you.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me.
All right, so let's open it up with a couple of stories here, because one thing that caught my attention was actually the foreword, which was, "Poor Jeremy, I'll get you to Australia one day, I swear, had to write a book first." Can you give us a little bit more of that story? Is that a really personal one?
Well, it's just that I get accused of disappearing for long periods of time when I'm in writing mode. So I did promise my son a while back that we'd go to Australia, and he's getting older and older. He's going to college this year. So I just said it kind of as a joke because I've been telling him that all along. But lo and behold, about 2 months ago, I got an offer to go speak in Australia, which I usually go once or twice a year in August. So I'm going to be doing an event there. And that's 2 weeks before the kid starts college. So it's like utterly perfect. So I was able to show him the book when it came in. That was the first time he read the dedication. And then I got to say, "And would you like to go to Australia this summer?" So it's perfect.
You get to deliver all sorts of promises there.
That's right.
Alrighty. So Think Simple is coming after Insanely Simple. And so I really like to know what, book writing is not for the faint of heart, as you know, right? What was really the genesis or the inspiration to extend it or to carry the conversation forward from Insanely Simple to Think Simple?
Well, the simple thing was in my head for probably 10 years before I wrote a book, the result of my having worked in the world of Steve Jobs and for ad agency Shai Day, which did amazing work. And always struck me as being so simple. So between the agency and the client, I was very, moved by the whole idea of the power of simplicity. So I wrote that first book, and that was all about Steve Jobs and Apple, because that's what my experience was, the main experience, and I thought that's what people cared about. And that book did pretty well. But so I started speaking around the world, and it's funny because everyone's so into this whole thing. Simplicity, it's so powerful, and people don't talk about it enough. People take it for granted and whatever. So the topic really struck home. But probably, sometime in the first, second, or third question, people would say, "Well, we get it. Simplicity is a good thing, but how do we do it, really?" And I don't know, really. I was talking about the principles of simplicity. So I thought it was a pretty good follow-up to go out in the world and find many different examples of people who are employing the power of leveraging the power of simplicity and hear their stories. So that's what I did. I ended up talking to 40 business leaders around the world in many different industries. So it's a much more diverse book than the first one, but it still focuses on the power of simplicity. And simplicity, as you know, shows up in so many different places. It's not just in products. It's in the way the company's organized and the way, you know, the philosophy of its website and, you know, the way it hires people. There are just a million different ways. So it was kind of interesting to me, more than kind of interesting. It was very interesting to get the opinions of all these really neat people around the world. Some big companies, small companies, famous companies, up and coming companies, and many different industries, you know, finance, groceries, you know, household goods, technology, all kinds of different industries. And they all had their unique views on the power of simplicity, but also some threads that were, you know, they all had in common, which was interesting too.
I think on the one hand, we all intuitively know the power of simplicity, right? So we kind of get it. And on the other hand, it's not natural for us to do. It's hard, it seems, to keep things simple. It seems like, yeah, you know, the larger the organization gets, the more you have to be an advocate for simplicity.
Yeah.
Do you happen to have any idea? I mean, you have 40, 40 interviewees and you have a lot of experience. What is it about, you know, about simplicity that makes it so hard for organizations to stick with or cling to?
Well, some of the people I talked to had interesting theories on that. Well, first of all, Steve Jobs always ends up being my example, and it's probably not fair because he was so, you know, incredibly unique. You know, people don't have that kind of personality and vision and all that kind of stuff rolled into one. But Steve had the ability to keep everyone in line, not like, you know, being in like a brutal way, you know, like a slave driver kind of a thing, but he kept everyone, he gave everyone focus and encouraged great creative work, et cetera. So it's very difficult. Being simple is not simple. It's easy to say, but it's true. Johnny Ive has said that quite often. It just takes a lot of work, and someone like Steve Jobs was able to do that. But the problem is, and one of the people I interviewed had an interesting take on this, which is that all people prefer simpler solutions. That's built into us, as every one of us as a human being. Of course, we prefer things to be easier than harder. That's kind of doesn't require great brain power to make that leap. But for some reason, when we're working inside a company and someone's paying us to do a job, we feel obligated to prove to the world that we're smart and we can contribute. So you get all kinds of ideas and processes and things sort of layered on and on and on over the years. And it can make things a lot more complicated. I mean, when a company comes up with a process, normally it's to ensure that some kind of success can be duplicated over time. And that's fine. You want to be able to have like a process in place so when new people come in, they can just sort of follow along and make the same thing happen yet again. But it seems that all these smart people keep adding things on, whether it's features on a product or a service or a website or whatever. So one of the guys I talked to was Brian Hartzer, who is the CEO of Westpac Bank in Australia. And it's the second biggest bank in Australia, you know, dozens of offices, tens of thousands of employees, a big company. And he said, that's what he discovered. And he's a huge fan of simplicity, by the way. He said that over the years, these things happen. And what he found himself doing was what he calls swimming upstream. So if he has a product, he would kind of go back into the past to see where it started and what its functions were and why it was so successful. And then look at all the things that have been added on over the years and realize that, you know what, we should probably get back to where we were, to a more pure state. So that's what he's been doing. That's been his guiding philosophy. It's sort of simplifying a lot of the products that they already have that became too complicated over time.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about that question before the interview. And one thing that came up for me, you know, as I've worked with organizations and entrepreneurs, is it's almost like no one gets credit for simplifying things. Well, no one is, you know, it's an absolute, but we don't often record like, hey, you made that so much simpler and easier and so on and so forth within the organization, right? But we seem to get credit for adding things, right? And so you added this new process. You made this better by addition, but you didn't necessarily make it better by simplification, right?
Yeah.
And so I wonder about that. I mean, it's just, and I know that's a gross overgeneralization, but it kind of reminds me, for instance, in the military, like we used to joke that whenever there was a new acronym, that there was a new major that got an award for that acronym, right? that was his or her contribution to that is coming up with a new acronym, but it's just really good.
Yeah. I think that is true. One of the things about simplicity, I come from the marketing world. Sometimes, you know, if you're a creative person, you have a creative director. And the thing about a simple solution or a simple, you know, creative effort, it just looks like so easy. Like you show some work to your supervisor, it's not uncommon to have someone go like, really? That's it? You've been working for a week and that's your idea? It's like, yes, look how simple it is. And it's like, well, it's not very creative, is it? Like, well, it is. You know, and you have this whole discussion. That's why I loved it, you know, the agency Shy a Day where I worked, because I think it embraced the idea of simplicity. And I used to feel that about their advertising. There were some huge campaigns they did that really took the world by storm. And I would look at them and go like, really? Nobody's thought of that before? It's kind of obvious, isn't it? And then the more I thought about it, I realized, no, it's never been done before. It just looks obvious. So there are probably people in the world who would have looked at that idea and said, it seems too obvious. Can't you do something more creative? And some of the most creative ideas on earth feel familiar in that way. Just, you know, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, sometimes there are creative ideas that do feel familiar and are bad, but that's, you know, the value of being really good at your job is you can identify which ones have that kind of value, the power of simplicity, and they are creative.
I think this actually ties into this idea, I call it Black Beret creativity, in the sense that we think that creativity has to look a certain way, you know, like someone that's got a Black Beret and just sort of really eccentric has come up with it, so on and so forth, right? Yeah. As opposed to really practical little eye innovations that happen that once someone moves, for instance, at Subway, you know, changing the orientation of the peppers and the lettuce to be a better flow, like it's not going to be like mind-boggling to anyone, but it's incredibly useful and incredibly creative and incredibly simple, right? But no one says, hey, that's a really great idea. It's just kind of like, duh. But I think it's that duh that we actually need more of than the sort of like creative art that we have to think about in some of the practical applications that we actually want them to be in, right?
And you're touching on a very interesting topic, because when you're dealing with creative people, there is this need to be creative. And if you don't feel like you're being creative, you don't feel proud. You don't feel like you're contributing. And if you're not recognized as being creative by the people who are supervising you, but it is so subjective. And, you know, you can have the same degree of creative talent in one place and be rejected and go to another place and be praised and promoted. So I've always said to people, as job advice in the world of advertising is, you know, don't get depressed if you're not being appreciated where you are, because there's probably a place down the block that's going to double your salary and say you walk on water. So got to stick with it and do what you believe in.
Yeah, I was reading, I think it was Bly. What's Bly's first name? Do you know Bly, the copywriter?
No.
Oh, it had to come to me. But he was saying in conversion copywriting or in ad copywriting, like the right solution is the one that gets people to buy, right? And so, you know, like the overly clever one and things like that, if it doesn't get people to buy, that's bad, right? And good. But, that's one way of thinking about it, obviously. There's this whole spectrum that I like that you've illuminated there. But you really have to think that, simplicity. I think that's the thing about simplicity. Not only is it subjective, I think there's also a utilitarian or utility value to it, right? That sometimes something that's more simple makes our life better. Sometimes that things that require us to think actually make our lives better. And that's where we get stuck, I think.
Yeah. I mean, there are all these shades of gray in creative development. And, what you just said about things that make us think, they're more powerful. Maybe this is a separate topic, but, sometimes you have a headline or something that is a little bit strange that someone would actually have to stop and think about it for a couple of seconds. But when they get it, it's so much more memorable, you know. It's, you know, but you could argue that another line might be simpler, you know. So again, so there's a simplicity quotient for every thing that you do, but then there's also, you know, the value of the idea too, and it all has to be weighed. At the end of the day, it is a subjective business, and there are people who are better at it than other people. But I do think it's a talent that can be nurtured and grown over time.
As you were interviewing your 40 interviewees, were there a few, or what were some of the surprising things that jumped out for you that, like, you hadn't anticipated people to take that route? Or just tell us about the surprises through your research.
Well, one thing that surprised me, I guess I secretly hoped it would be the case, but there is a perception that big companies, you know, are just doomed. Basically, they can't ever get simpler. And I talked to a couple of very big companies that have done an amazing job of simplification. And I was very impressed that their CEOs, you know, had that opinion. And they were unique people in that they didn't, they weren't led by numbers. They believed in their own instinct quite a bit. But they also, much as Steve Jobs did, let me start at the beginning. The first thing that made me believe a big company could actually become simpler is Apple. You could look at what Steve Jobs did when he came back in 1997. The company had grown 11 years without him, or had stumbled for 11 years, whatever. But they're all over the world. They're a big company. So Steve walked in the door and had to simplify it. Any CEO anywhere on earth could wake up one morning and say, you know what, we're going to do some things. And what Steve did, according to the people who were there working inside Apple with him, was pretty much one step at a time. Just didn't try to do too much. It was a very methodical approach. So I talked to these people. Telstra, which is the largest telecom in Australia, and Hyundai Card, which is the credit card division of Hyundai Motors, which is two very different companies in different cultures. Very, very large companies, and their leaders undertook a simplification program that resulted in making things easier to focus on for employees. It makes it, you know, people vastly prefer working in an organization that is simpler. They know what they're doing every day, and then easier for the customers as well. So, and they had interesting techniques for doing what they were doing. The credit card company, just popping into my head here, it was funny. There was almost a bit of Steve Jobs in that. This guy, his name is Ted Chung. He showed up there, I guess it's about 11 or 12 years ago now, but the company was losing over $1 billion a year when he came in, and now it's making profit more than $1 billion a year. So he's gone total extreme one to the other. And, he did it in an unusual way for a credit card company that, again, made me think a little bit of Apple. The people he brought in to help him, he was not like a financial genius. That wasn't his area of expertise. But he brought in people from all these different industries. He said, I don't really want to have a bunch of financial people around me. I want to have people who are just like brilliant thinkers, and they can help create something very, very special. So he had 8 or 10 people on his executive committee, and very few of them were financial experts. And then he just embraced the concept of design, which seemed very strange to me for a credit card company. I didn't know that would be an issue, really. But the building was like amazing. I wanted to work there. It was so cool. They had, you know, furniture from great designers around the world, and their lobby was amazing, and the cafeteria was amazing. It was all very, very cool. And they treated their credit cards, these products that they make, as jewels. It was like, they said when people take them to other parts of the world, a lot of times they get a reaction like, what is this thing? And they're, no, it's a credit card. Trust me, just put it in the machine, it'll work. Because it doesn't look like a credit card. It's like very minimally designed. When you get your card in the mail, it would be in like this gorgeous box, like an Apple product would come. And it just sort of, they created this feeling of a lifestyle, you know, that's the way you'd rather live. you'd want to be a part of that world. And they've nurtured that over these years and done kind of amazing things. A credit card company that loves great design. They do design projects for other companies. They were designing bus shelters for the city of Seoul when I was there, and they had these gorgeous designs on the wall. You know, they just give their people the freedom to create things and help in these, you know, civic duties. So very, very impressive. And as a result of all that, people love working there. You know, it's like they're inspired to go to work every day. And you wouldn't think that necessarily of a credit card company. So things like that really surprised me. I was delighted when I saw that. But other large companies, DirecTV, South America, the bank I mentioned, Westpac Bank, there are all these big companies that actually found ways to move seriously in a simpler direction and see visible results. So it gives you hope for the world.
So speaking of simplicity and keeping things simple, one thing that happens to many authors is that their books start getting away from them in scope and different things like that. Did that occur while you were writing Think Simple? And if so, how did you rein it back in?
Well, you don't have to worry about things like that with me because my brain tends to stay on one track. And okay. I can't think in a very complex way, really. I'm very simple. It did in the sense that the first book I wrote was based on my own experiences with Steve Jobs mostly, and other companies I've worked with. So that was rather quick. It took me 6 months. This new book, I thought I'd learned all these lessons and I could do it so much faster. It took me 2 years to do it. And that's because I had these 40 interviews, each one's an hour or 2 hours. I had to transcribe everything and pull out the parts that made the most sense to me. And then somehow weave these 40 stories into one story that made like a good book. So it was just a lot more work than I thought, but you know, it's not like it expanded out of control. It just expanded in sheer volume that I wondered how I would control. But you know, I sort of came up with a methodology as I went along of going through each transcript one at a time and pulling out things that were surprising or interesting and putting them in columns with the other people I'd spoken to and trying to, you know, see what points of difference they had and what points of similarity they had. So I'm not sure if I ever want to do it again, but it was interesting.
I was talking to my editor earlier today and I was like, I have, you know, a lot of appreciation for people who will do the interview book and weave it all together because it's more challenging than one might think.
Yeah. You know, I was going to say, one person who did that amazingly, I thought, was Walter Isaacson in the Steve Jobs biography. A lot of people don't like the book, people from the world of Apple in particular. And I think it was too negative. You know, I think Steve was a much more interesting and positive person than he was portrayed in the book. He was pretty negative. But what did strike me was like there were like 20 some odd interviews with Steve. And then there were like a couple of hundred interviews with other people. And to turn that into one story as he did, it's so daunting. But I assume at his level, he's got a whole staff working with them and he can sort of direct them. It might be easier than, you know, the challenge that faces guys like you or me.
Yeah.
All by ourselves.
So what did you learn from the writing of Think Simple that you really appreciate, or, you know, maybe it was surprising to you, but, you know, you learn something every time you do something, a project like this.
Yeah. I mean, I always had this belief that simplicity was this incredibly powerful concept in advertising. And I came to believe that even more so, but in addition, just what an incredibly powerful business concept it is and how it can be applied to so many different parts of a business. So it was eye-opening in that way. It was something I already believed in, but by the time I was done with it, I believed it in a bigger way. So it worked out very, very well. And you know, opened my eyes to what life is like in these other industries that I've never really been part of. Most of my advertising life has been with technology companies, so BMW thrown in as well, but mostly that. So, you know, to suddenly be talking to like the CEO of Whole Foods and the Container Store and Jerry Greenfield from Ben & Jerry's, he was a really interesting one. Some very, very interesting people who I found, to my delight, they agreed with me. But then They also corrected me sometimes. In fact, Ben and Jerry, Jerry Greenfield is a very good example, because I started, he was one of the first ones I interviewed, and I was laying the concept on him that you know, Simplicity and your company has always been so focused, and it's grown to this global thing, and I'm wondering how you maintain that. Well, he's sort of stopped me at the beginning and said, you know, there is this difference between something that's simple and appears to be simple. And that's how I started my book, actually, because I think it's a really good point that it is this perception of simplicity that's important. You know, a person who uses a product or a service doesn't give a hoot how hard it was for you to create it. Whether they feel like it's simple or not is the only thing that matters. It doesn't, you know, nothing else matters. Like, you look at an iPhone, obviously it took years of research and technological development, but I just want to know whether I can pick it up and use it. And I don't really care how hard you had to work, you know? Mm-hmm. So Jerry Greenfield's point was that ice cream machines, when they started out, were made for smooth ice cream. There was no machinery available that could take these big chunks of candy and cookies and mix them together and make ice cream in quantities. So they had to mix their ice cream by hand in the back room in the first, you know, the first shop that they opened. And to succeed, they had to basically invent machinery. And that was not easy at all. But, you know, when they finally did it, you still have this perception of Ben and Jerry's as being fun ice cream. It's got the graphics that are always the same and these interesting flavors. And there's a story about, you know, the company having a social conscience and all that. But it's all based on a thing that's like really, really hard to do. But you'd never really think that.
Yeah, what the image that just came up for me is, you know, the iceberg metaphor. And it seems like the more simple something appears to be, the more that's under the surface that you don't see most of the time. Whereas, you know, when we throw a big product and it's got all the features and we could talk and blah, 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 it's like we see a lot of the iceberg, but maybe I would have liked it to be have a little bit more under the water.
Yeah, I think that's a very good analogy. And again, I, you know, as I always do, go back to Steve Jobs. I think he was really good at handling, staying on top of all those details that you can't even imagine are there. He just had his vision and didn't want to see people wreck it. You know, it's like we have to keep the idea pure. And there's all these complicating factors. And I've told, you know, my stories many times to people about, you know, telling Steve that something couldn't be done. And like we had to print something and you know, he wanted it to run like in 2 weeks. It was like a 16-page piece back in the days when the internet was sort of just taking off. But, you know, we had to put these things in the News Weekly magazines and he wanted it to be printed and he'd approved it and like, let's get it run in 2 weeks. Like, well, can't really do that. They, you know, they have a whole thing process. It's like 6 weeks, you know, they can't do it. And I gave him all the reasons because my production person told me all the reasons. And Steve just said, that's ridiculous. They print, you know, I think their magazine is like, you know, 64 pages or something every week. And so that, you know, and they do it every week. They don't wait 6 weeks. So I want to run this thing in 2 weeks. Like, you know, if you can't do it, then I'll find someone who can. And it's like, uh-oh, we better find someone quick. So, you know, then you pressure the News Weekly and they go, well, yeah, we can do it if we really had to do it, basically. So it's one of those lessons I learned. Because I put my reputation out there for Steve, and I explained him very, you know, very calmly about, you know, way this couldn't be done. You're asking the impossible, and that turned out to be possible because he just used common sense and said, obviously, if we really, really want to do something, we can do it. And you can't tell me we can't do it. And I did tell him we can't do it. So I had to sort of fight my way back to credibility with him after that little episode. But I think those are the things that every leader encounters. You know, there's, you know, people who say things can't be done. And that was certainly one of the things that made Steve Jobs who he was. He didn't take no for an answer very often.
I think that's a beauty from a leader. Like when you know that that's one of their lines, like you can't go to Steve, you can't go to some leaders and say it can't be done. You have to figure out how it's going to get done and tell them how it's going to get done. And, you know, maybe say it's going to be this much more expensive than it might have otherwise be, and we can do it, right? And so it's just, I mean, you hinted at that a little bit in the, maybe not that directly. Let's see, I might be confused. But when you were talking about values, right, this is just one of those personal values that some people will have around like finding and creating solutions where it seems to be impossible to do so, right? Some people have that sort of drive, and it's good to know. It's good to know the team and them.
Yeah. I think, I mean, you know, all through your life, various leaders tell you that, you know, you'll never be perfect. You'll always make mistakes and you always learn from your mistakes. And I think Steve made mistakes. But yeah, I mean, that was one example of something I did once and never did again with him. It's like, you know, you get burned and go, okay, well, I'm not going to last too long if I have that attitude in the future. So then it did become like, okay, how are we going to approach this problem and solve it? And you realize that that's I'm sure that's what Steve did with everyone, with his designers and engineers. And it's like, you know, you hear all the stories about the development of the iPhone, for example, and how, you know, the engineers wanted 3 buttons. And he's like, you know what? I don't want any buttons. And they're like, well, you have to have something in there. And he's, you know, you can't do it otherwise. And it's like, no, sure, you can do it. And, you know, they end up compromising on 1 button, which is pretty darn simple. Yeah, so I think, you know, there are many stories about people saying that Steve Jobs got them to perform at a higher level than they thought them possible of themselves. And I am here to personally attest to that. I think he definitely pushed, and we ended up doing some stuff that was better than what we originally were going to do. And that original thing we thought was really, really good. Yeah, you know, and he pushed it even farther. So not many CEOs have that level of you know, judgment, creative taste, and that kind of thing. So again, what made Steve special?
Yeah. If you had to, so let's imagine any random organization out there, and I know this is a hard one, right? I would say it depends to this question, right? But if you had to say, if you think that you're swimming upstream in complexity and things like that, and you had to start in one place, that would be the 85% solution for everybody. Where would that one place be?
Well, one thing I heard from a lot of these leaders, and also saw in Steve Jobs for sure, was the ability to put themselves in the customer's shoes and be really brutal about that. And some of these things, it's like we were talking about before, about, you know, simple ideas seem so obvious. So I say, put yourself in the customer's shoes. And it's like, well, how could you be any more obvious, Ken? but it's true. And it's amazing how many people do that. And then they're like, well, yeah, but we need to compromise here or there because it's just not possible, whatever. And I think the people who are really good at it are able to sort of step outside their own company and look at it totally from the eye of the customer and ask themselves, is this such a good experience that people would actually tell their friends and family about it? Or is it just kind of like, you know, they interact with us and then they forget us because they could probably go anywhere and get the same kind of experience. And I think when you're really, really ruthless about, you know, whether or not you are giving people something that's just, you know, that will delight them versus just possibly satisfy them, that's the difference. And I think it's the simpler experience, you know, is normally that thing that you can love more. And that simpler experience is what creates loyalty. You could look at Apple's, you know, audience. I mean, they're the most loyal customers in the world because they've gotten that, you know, not just once or twice, but 5, 6, 7 times in a row. They keep buying stuff and get delighted by it. You know, and when the company stops doing that, that's when they start losing customers. But, you know, all along the way, people are talking about them. And, you know, so the ability to sort of separate yourself from the company and be the customer, look at, you know, how you feel from the very first ad to what you know, the packaging of the product, the whole experience, and look at where you can make that better. Again, I feel obvious pointing this out, but it is kind of amazing how many companies could improve if they just stepped back and went through that exercise.
Absolutely. I'm going to jump on there and say the smaller the company, sometimes the more you have to do that, because usually you have a smaller team that's in the development and has that sort of expertise trap. And clearly everybody knows what you know and everybody will value what you value and things like that. So it's almost I think that might be an advantage of larger organizations, that people can look at whatever it is and say, what is this? Well, like, what, why, you know, I don't understand. Where smaller companies, you tend to get groupthink a little bit more.
Yeah. I found interesting differences in the small companies and big companies too. The smaller companies tended to, or again, Jeff Fleur, the StubHub founder, co-founder, he talked about, well, we didn't have a mission statement or anything like that. We just kind of like did it. And it was this thing that had value from the beginning. You know, a lot of companies sort of have struggled to create the value first and then find ways to monetize it. Well, StubHub, every time, you know, you bought tickets, you'd be paying $100 and they just say, we'll take 10%. You know, they were making money from the very, very start. And he thought, well, I've never really run a company before. But then the more successful they became, and he started bringing in people who had a little bit more business experience, finally somebody said, shouldn't we have like a mission or something? So it's something to sort of guide us as we create new products and new services and things. And he said, you never really thought about that before, but they did that. And they found kind of in their advertising materials, they found a line that worked for them, which was that StubHub is all about the fan. So fans want to sell their tickets, fans want to buy their tickets. If you're a fan of music or a fan of sports, this is the place you want to be. And that not only helped them, you know, keep the site focused, but it even helped them when they ran into legal issues and they were attacked by everyone, you know, the teams, the musicians, the venues, everybody was saying, you can't resell tickets. That's, you know, not fair. And they said, it's for the fans. That's what the fans want to do. And that was their defense in court. And they succeeded, you know, in putting their case forward. It's like, yeah, that's all we care about is making fans happy. That's why this company exists. That's our mission. And that's our guideline for everything we do. And worked pretty well for them.
Good, good. If people remember nothing else about you, or your body of work from this episode, what would you want that to be?
Wow. That's something. It's very funny because as someone who, you know, lost his parents, you know, pretty long time ago now, but I remember going through all my, like my father's stuff, my brother and sister and I got together and we, you know, this guy, you know, he lived a long, happy life. And we ended up having like a little box that represented his accomplishments. And it was kind of depressing, like, oh, that's what people are going to remember, Dad, huh? You know, so nobody's ever really asked me that. I have a little bit more than can fit in one box right now, but I'm certain that will be the case. No, I really think, you know, I guess because I've written two books about simplicity now, that is kind of like my passion right now. That's what I go around talking about and everything. So if I, you know, became the guy who you know, who saw the power of simplicity and tried to, you know, help other companies do that, I think that would be a happy thing for me. And then there's always my little letter I, you know, and that was the big deal for me was creating that, but that'll go away sometime soon, you know. So there you have it. Simplicity in the I. And the I was pretty simple.
It was very, very simple. And thanks so much for your contributions to that simplicity, because I could not buy another CK3600 i2 computer. Like, what is that product? I have no idea.
Yeah. And that's one of those common sense, obvious things too. When you look at how many products there are in the world that have impossible names, and you think, like, you know, you want people to be able to say, like, you know, I love my iPhone, or I love my Galaxy, or, you know, something like that. And yet they have these names that are impossible. You can't refer to them in conversation. You know, what it just seems like, isn't it pretty obvious that you're making things more difficult than they have to be? And yet, you know, it keeps happening. In fact, so once in a while, somebody asks me the question, well, what's going to happen when, you know, the whole world is becoming simpler in certain ways, and a lot of people out there trying to do that? So what happens when everything is simple, and then the power of simplicity won't be differentiating at all anymore? I'm like, well, I honestly don't think you'll have to worry about that for a few thousand more years at the very least, because it is in our nature. Just look all around us. I mean, I think people who understand and appreciate the power of simplicity will always have an advantage. And then one day, far, far in the future, we can worry about what happens when everything is simple.
Wherever you have groups of people, you will have complexity erupt upon you. If you don't believe me, add one guest to your dinner party and ask them ask the party where they want to go. You'll get complexity all over the place, right?
Very, very true. Yeah.
All righty, Ken. Thanks so much for joining me today. And I really appreciate your body of work here.
Well, it was my pleasure. And let's get together any old time.
Okay, Creative Giant, so you heard it from Ken. What can you do to embrace and advocate simplicity in your life, in your organization, to make things better, more useful, and more delightful? Until next time, stand tall.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Giant Show. To find more tools and inspiration for creative giants, head on over to productiveflourishing.com. Stand tall, Creative Giant.